Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the July 1st, 2014 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. May I ask folks, if you have electronic devices of any kind, please silence them for our meeting. Also, if there should be an emergency, there's a set of stairs to my right in the back and to my left in the front. The first order of business tonight is a public hearing. The public hearing is on the Tompkins Courtland Community College proposed operating budget for 2014-2015. Are there folks here that would like to speak to the Tompkins Courtland Community College budget? Carl Haynes is here, President Haynes. Carl, do you want to say anything?
Well, I thought I was going to be doing a short presentation when the item was up for a vote.
Please take, why don't you sit and...
Can we do it now?
Do the presentation during the public hearing, as far as I'm concerned, unless other people would rather have it later. Why don't you go ahead.
No, it's fine with me. Would you be voting on that? Would you ask to have this voted on early on in the agenda?
Yes, because I don't want to have to keep President Haynes any longer than necessary.
Carl, you want to come sit over here? I think that would be great.
It's a nice entree.
Want to open the meeting?
Yeah.
Why don't we take a second to open the meeting while President Haynes is getting ready? If there are no other public comments, would you stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We have the roll call, please.
Mr. Shinagawa and Mr. Sigler have asked to be excused. Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
I am also here.
Ms. Herrera? Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
We have 12 members present.
Well, we certainly have a quorum then.
11.
We have 11 members present.
11 members. President Haynes.
Okay, I would refer you to the budget booklet that I hope you have in front of you and to page 3 in particular. And I'll provide maybe just a brief overview, and then, of course, I'd be happy to answer any more detailed questions that you might have or anyone has. On that page, I would go to the bottom of the page where it talks about revenues. I'll highlight the revenue assumptions that are implicit in the numbers that you see there. The first one, of course, being tuition and fees, going up a total of 0.25%. Tuition itself is actually going up about $100 a semester. However, that figure reflects the fact that our enrollment from last budget year to this proposed budget year is declining by 5.5%. So that's why you see such a small increment in revenue in that regard. The state increase is 2.36%. That actually includes our rental aid as well as the regular $75 per FTE increase that we received. And I would just highlight there that the state aid increase, though $75, is still $178 less than it was 5 years ago. So if we were only at the same place that we were 5 years ago in terms of state aid, there'd be an additional $668,000 in this budget that probably would have foregone any tuition increase for sure. The local sponsor share, we are asking the sponsors for a 3% increase, and the total increase for both sponsors is $132,792. Tompkins' share of that is $83,659. There is appropriated cash surplus that we're asking for your approval on of $88,000, and that's coming out of our fund balance, as you know, and it shows a 0% increase there, but in fact that's a 100% increase there because last year it was zero. In charge of the counties, this is our chargeback. The number of FTEs from other counties is actually down slightly. However, the rate, based on the formula that the state provides, is giving us a little bit greater rate per FTE. So that's why you see the 6.4% increase. And then other revenues are going up. Mostly that's due to the rollout of our new culinary program and our sustainable farming program and so on that has got some significant lab fees associated with it. That pretty much, I think, gives you the whole revenue side of the equation, a 2.2% basically increase in the bottom line of the budget. Where we're spending that money, personnel services going up 1.23%. It's a smaller increase than you might assume based on our contractual obligations with our various employee groups. However, it does reflect 10 fewer positions being funded in this budget for next year than was the case last year. Equipment down by $152,000 or 60%. However, the good news on that doesn't show up in the budget here, I keep losing the voice here for some reason, is that our foundation did step up and approve a request earlier this month for early June, for a $75,000 commitment to support equipment purchases for the college. So that's helping us immensely. The contractual expenses up 0.28%. That, again, a very small increase, but significant because the budget does reflect about a $350,000. Can you hear me if I just talk without this thing? Are you?
We need it for the TV broadcast.
Get farther away. Okay. All right. Contractual expense is going up 0.28%. However, a bit misleading perhaps because there is an increase of about $350,000 in that line, in that portion of our budget for the rental facilities for our Farm to Bistro initiative, half of which is offset by increases by the state aid that pays for part of that, and the rest of that is being accommodated by fees. So with that increase, a significant chunk of money, that's offset by a lot of other reductions in various other departments and so on. And then contractual offsets has to do a lot with our concurrent enrollment and international students, and benefits going up 5.5%. Again, health insurance being a significant factor there. Even though we're budgeting a 9% increase in health insurance, when you look at the cost of the health insurance, it's not going up that much, again, because of the reduction in the number of employees. And we also have a fairly significant increase in retirement incentives because we did get a very large number of people opting for a retirement incentive in all three of our employee associations at the college. So that's kind of a quick and dirty overview. I'd be happy to answer more detailed questions or whatever else you would like to know about the budget.
Thank you, Carl. Questions for Carl? I have Martha Robertson, then Peter Stein.
Hi, Carl. Thanks very much for this. I think that the number about the state aid, if it had been the same as it was 5 years ago, $668,000 is a big deal. Do I understand, if I did the math right, that the tuition increase for full-time tuition comes to about a 4.6% increase?
I think it's just over 4%. I'm not sure if it's 4.6.
I
should have that on the top of my head, and I don't right now. But
the line there on page, our packet, page 31, says a $200 increase in full-time tuition and parentheses $4,500 a year. So the 45 is after the 200 increase?
Yes. Yeah.
So I guess I just want to say this is, you can see right there, that's the shift.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the shift from the state budget, which is based on income tax, and putting the cost increases directly on the students and reducing access, and that's been a continuing story. Those retirement incentives that you mentioned, is that a one-time thing, like, well, sort of for a few people to, or for a few years?
The extent of that number that's in the budget this year will be somewhat one-time. You will see a number there for the next couple of years, but we got most of the retirements that are effective for next year. We have 10 faculty, I think, but 7 of whom are leaving this year, and then 3 or 4 coming in the following years. So they have up until 2016 to actually retire, but they had to give us a notice now, similarly with some of the other associations. So the big number is here in this budget. There will be smaller numbers in the next couple of years.
Thank you.
Peter?
Carl, could you give me some picture of the fraction of the courses that are taught by full-time faculty and compared to those that are taught by adjuncts, and how that's changing over time? Has that stabilized, or is it what's going on with that?
Well, it's been increasing. I'll characterize you in terms of the last five-year period. During the early part of this last 5 years, we were growing significantly, and we were adding some faculty positions. But the number of faculty positions that we were increasing wasn't keeping pace with the level of student growth, so we were absorbing some of that with adjunct faculty. Now we've hit the speed bump, okay, with last year and then this most recent year with enrollment decline. So some of the faculty positions that are not being filled next year due to the retirements, we hope to fill over the next 3 to 5 years. We'll be starting some next year, 1 or 2, and then maybe 2 or 3 each of the following years. So we will be increasing that. So there's a – up until that, we – historically, if I want to go back 10, 15 years, we were maybe 35% or so of our instruction was provided by adjunct. That worked its way up to about 50%, and that's probably about where it's at right now. Next year, you'll see a bump in that regard, however, because most of the faculty positions that are retiring next year will be absorbed by adjuncts. Some of that is offset by the fact that the enrollment decline is requiring less, allowing us to offer fewer courses. So it's hard to really compare apples to apples in that regard.
The question that I was more interested in, I mean, because a full-time faculty member teaches more courses than an adjunct, I would think. And so
sure.
I think it
well, and do a lot of other work besides as well.
Right. But it made me wanted to phrase the question the way I did. For a student, what fraction of an average student's curriculum will be taught by an adjunct compared to a full-time faculty member? And is that number changing?
I don't think there's any way to answer that, Peter, to be honest. It depends on what course, what curriculum,
yeah,
whether full-time, part-time. If I threw out a number, it would just be pretty meaningless, actually.
Okay. Anyone else? Julie Kiefer.
The local sponsors, our county and Cortland County, are paying, I think, less this coming year, this budgeted year, for your net expenses than we paid a year ago, which says to me that we're not as bad as New York State, but we're not keeping up where I think we should be. And I hope I'm sorry to see you having to dip into your very limited reserves. So I'm hoping next budget year our county will be able to do more for you, because I know you need it.
Well, I appreciate that, Julie, and I know we have had some discussions with the leadership of both the Budget Committee and your chair and so on with the counterparts in Cortland to and the respective administrators to begin a process this fall, okay, for next year, so that we usually we start that process in March or so. And but to begin to take a look at soap performance, we're already looking at our budgets for the 2 years subsequent to this one, because of the staffing changes and that sort of thing that are going to occur, and trying to give us that kind of a lead time to make the kinds of adjustments we're going to need to make. So it's we're going to be out in front of that, and I hope that those discussions will yield the result you're suggesting.
Go ahead, Julie.
On another subject, as I understand it, you're going solar in a big way, and that will certainly help your electricity budget, so congratulations on that.
Yeah, we're excited about that. As a matter of fact, I think I just learned a couple of days ago they're about ready to start that project, start the construction. And for those that don't know, it's a 10-acre solar array, I think the largest one in the whole region. And it will supply 90% of the electrical needs, energy needs of our main campus. And it will save immediately in the forthcoming budget year about $30,000 on our electric bill, and over the course of the 20 years of that project about $2 million. So yeah, and we've already been doing a lot with energy saving already. Jim Turner, as you well know, has just it's a long list of little things, but they all add up and make a huge difference, and we've literally cut our utility bill in half over the last 7 or 8 years, and he deserves a lot of credit for that.
Carl, would you touch on your building project, the master plan, how that's proceeding?
Yeah, we're underway, and the Enrollment Service Center, which is taking the college form, and I'm going to assume here everybody is relatively familiar with our campus, but, basically tearing out that Enrollment Service, the form, and expanding out underneath the overhang of the main building, and creating a new Enrollment Service Center, an expanded Enrollment Service Center than what we have now on the second floor. So we're very excited about that. There's also work going on with the drainage work and the parking lots and that sort of thing. Later this summer, I think they're going to be doing things with the siding around the building. So the main part of the project is the Enrollment Service Center, and then do some residual work with computer labs and things of that sort. And then the other part of the project is infrastructure primarily. So Jim Turner seems to think we could be done as soon as next April. I'm not going to hold my breath on that one, but I think by the time we get to late next spring sometime, we'll definitely should have most of that work done. So it's a total, again, for those of you who don't remember all this that we went through in detail probably 2 years ago, but it's a $7 million overall master plan project, and the state did approve it 2 years ago for 50% of their share, and the rest were drawing upon our capital chargebacks to fund the local share of it. So we're underway, and things are looking good.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks for the great job you folks always do with your budget and explaining it to all of us.
Sure.
I wondered if you might move ahead with Resolution J.
I will do that. Adoption of the 2014-2015 operating budget, Tompkins-Cortland Community College, and I would move that.
Seconded by Brian.
Let me just say that, and maybe you mentioned it, Carl, that Cortland County has already approved.
They approved it.
Our budget.
Yeah, last Thursday night.
Or your budget, and we both agreed that a 3% increase would be something we could deal with. And I appreciate very much your many trips here and your invitation over to the college that we were able to learn about this budget and see what you were going to do. So.
Discussion on the budget? Ready to vote? All those in favor, would you please raise your hand? Those opposed? That's unanimous. Carl, thank you.
Great, thank you. Appreciate your continued support. Thank you.
Before we go to presentation of proclamations, I wondered if you folks would join me in a moment of silence for a former chair of the Tompkins County, then called the Board of Representatives, Stuart Stein, who has passed away. Stuart was a great leader, a great mentor to many of us, and hopefully we'll hear more and have some kind of a way to honor him in the future. But tonight, I'd just like to stop for a moment and think about Stuart Stein. Thank you. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I have one proclamation tonight. Is there anyone here to receive the invasive species proclamation? If not, I'll just indicate that we are proclaiming the week of July 6th through 12th, 2014, as Invasive Species Awareness Week in Tompkins County. We know there are many animal and vegetable invasive species, probably insects and other things, and it's important that we keep this in mind, and we thank Salem Water Conservation District and others who keep this before us, hydrilla, other kinds of issues. So we'll be passing that on to the group. There will be an executive session tonight to discuss labor negotiations. Now we're going to go to privilege of the floor for public. We ask anyone who would like to speak to us tonight to please sign a blue card and hand it up. The time for speaking on privilege of the floor, which is a privilege, is 3 minutes. There's a new process we're using on the board. There's a countdown clock, so that if you lose track, you can keep an eye on your time. At the end of that time, there'll be a signal, an audible signal. It sounds like a telephone ring, and we'd ask people to conclude at that point. I'm going to read the rules for speaking under privilege of the floor. On the blue cards, one, I agree to a 3-minute time limit. Two, I agree not to raise my voice. Three, I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about job performance of any named county employees other than elected officials. Five, after 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Six, I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. The first card I have is Sarah Hess. Would you please state your municipality?
Yes, my name is Sarah Hess. I live in the city of Ithaca, and I'm a volunteer with Solar Tompkins. Several years ago, my husband and I installed a solar hot water system at our house, and now we're planning to add solar panels as well. I'm an active proponent and a worker for solar energy. I'm here to thank you for considering reversing the county's decision to opt out of New York State's 15-year property tax waiver for renewable energy installments. I do understand that currently it's not necessary, that because people who put up solar installments like myself are not assessed for any increased value that would affect their taxes. So for practical reasons, it's not needed. But I have two reasons for asking that the policy be changed anyway, and I appreciate your considering changing it. One is that homeowners who are considering the switch to solar power anticipate this issue as a downside consequence. I've been to several meetings where this question comes up from the audience. They ask Solar Tompkins director, who's giving presentations, how adding solar panels will affect their property assessment and their taxes. If we tell them that there's a countywide policy of waiver from tax increases based on the potential increased value, it's just one more barrier that's taken out of the way, and this will encourage, we believe, more people to consider solar. The other reason is that sometime in the future, I don't know when, but I believe that time will come, renewable energy features of a home or a farm may be seen as a financial asset that would add value. I believe that's logical and will happen. And at that point, it seems only fair that Tompkins County residents would have the same real estate advantages of tax exemption that residents of our surrounding counties would have. So thank you very much for considering it, and I look forward to the public hearing.
Thank you. Bryce Smith.
Hello. Thank you for letting us present here. My name is Bryce Smith. I live in Trumansburg. And I will just add to a little bit of what Sarah said, that I want to speak in support of the public hearing and examining this question of opting back into the property tax exemption. I'm also a volunteer with Solar Tompkins. I've been to all 14 of their public meetings, and every single one so far has had this property tax question come up during the questioning. The Solar Tompkins program is extremely successful so far. We have just recently crossed the 500 enrollment point, so 500 families have so far signed up since the end of May to examine going solar. And part of what makes Solar Tompkins and the Solarize model so successful is eliminating and reducing those few remaining barriers. And uncertainty is certainly one of those. And so anything that can be done to help make the process simpler, smoother, will only help expand the adoption of solar throughout the county. This is something that I want to thank you all very much for considering, and I think it will be an extremely valuable piece to have in the overall mix to be able to clearly and communicate to people that, yes, there is this 15-year exemption and that you will be able to be free from having an increase in your property taxes so long as for that 15 years if you were to choose to opt back in. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Melissa Kemp. Thank you. Linda Grace Kobus.
Thank you. Can you hear me? Or am I close enough?
You can tip it down a little, I think. Drop it.
Well, there you go. Thank you. Thank you for letting me speak. I'm Linda Grace Kobus, and I'm representing the Indian Creek Neighborhood Association, which was formed last October after the county voted to enter into a sales contract with NRP Properties for the sale of the so-called Biggs property, which is 25 and a half acres of undeveloped woodland on West Hill. Last week, New York State Supreme Court Justice Philip Rumsey rejected a motion by the county to have our lawsuit dismissed. This ruling soundly validated our legal challenge to the sale, and it was also a firm affirmation that county legislators must be active stewards of public lands. I urge you all to read the decision by Judge Rumsey, because he cited several precedents that said that the county must perform a complete environmental review before selling undeveloped public lands for private development. We urge that you reconsider this vote and this plan to develop the woods. I also urge you to go to the site and see that this is not open space. It's very dense woodland that borders Indian Creek. We have almost unanimous public opposition, not only on West Hill but throughout the county, for the destruction of acres and acres of this green space. Since we formed ICNA, as we call it, we have raised almost $15,000 from people on West Hill mostly, but again throughout the county, to pay our legal funds, and that's money that could easily be better used elsewhere. It's a bad deal for the taxpayers because we will be subsidizing a private investment firm with tax breaks at every level, and the cost of extending the infrastructure to the undeveloped land will be borne by county taxpayers. In our course of our organizing, we've reached out to the folks at the Overlook Development across the street from the hospital. There are more than 100 families there. There are about 200 kids there. Half the families don't have cars. They have inadequate public transportation. There are lots of social problems. The kids are at least 7 miles away from the nearest school. There is no parks. There are no, there's no community space for them. And I really urge you again to go there and see the social problems of isolating a community, especially a low-income community. We've been trying to work with them to help them resolve some issues, like finding summer meals for the kids who can't get downtown, and also people are contributing to a food bank they set up themselves up at Overlook. We think that the woodland is an important natural resource that must be protected for the sake of the health and viability of the Cayuga Lake watershed. These woods could not be replaced in our lifetime or our children's lifetime. We need to develop local ideas on how to develop this and preserve, but to preserve this local resource and not sell public land to private investors. We urge you to make a decision for the planet, for climate, for the Cayuga Lake watershed, and look to the future and not old ideas. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jonathan Comstock.
Hi, my name's Jonathan Comstock. I'm from the town of Caroline. And I'm also here to briefly, not take up too much of your time, but support the public hearing that we want to have on opting, having the county opt back in on the renewable energy tax exemption. As you've already been, has been said, this comes up at each of our public meetings. The Solar Tompkins program right now is running just fabulously. We've got over 500 families have enrolled in the program so far. But what we can do this year, the actual number of homes that convert, is only the first step of what the impact that we hope this program will have on the county, because the follow-up is that these people become solar ambassadors and that all of their friends come. And as once we have, you know, that everybody in Tompkins County knows someone personally who has a solar panel on their roof, this is supposed to be a self-propagating conversion. And part of that momentum is to have things like this talking point of, you know, that there's a property tax exemption. It's meant to be a support, and part of it is financial, part of it is just the psychological assurance and momentum that that can help to that effort. So I won't bother you with more details. I think other people have already mentioned them all. But thank you very much.
Thank you, Jonathan. That's the last card I had. Now we have an opportunity for any municipal official who wishes to make a report, if there happen to be any that wishes to do that. Okay. And not seeing any hands up, I will move to privilege the floor for our legislators. Anyone want to say anything? Martha Robertson.
Thank you, Mike. Just a small thing, but maybe not. We were emailed, and there's been some discussion about the form that public speakers use and changes that the GO committee discussed and that have been made in the form. And I understand that it's not something that the legislature as a whole votes on. But I just want to say I am not in agreement with item number 4, saying that it says here, I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. So first to be clear, that the person signing this doesn't give up their right to talk about elected officials, but I don't think it's right that the public can't discuss experiences that they have with county employees, and it's part of accountability, and I think that that's, sometimes it happens that there's a problem, and they go through channels, and they still feel they haven't been heard, and they want to bring something directly to us or to the public, and I think that it's our job to hear those things if somebody wants to make comments like that.
Other comments? Kathy Luz Herrera.
Thank you. To segue off of what Martha said, I was troubled also to see that provision in there. It's strictly from a free speech perspective. I feel that asking anyone, thank you, I was troubled to see the restrictions that people were being asked to sign up, to sign, agree to, from a free speech perspective. I believe it's inappropriate for us to ask people to restrain themselves in those ways. Personally, I think that the public voice is being squelched too much and is being distorted. And I'll just segue here. In case in point, the recent Supreme Court decisions have, again, totally freaked me out because I predict, okay, I like that we got an appellate decision around the fracking, and I'm very pleased about that, as many of us are. However, given the fact that free speech applies to non-people, it wouldn't surprise me, and here I am, saying that we're going to see an infusion from the private sector of money into local politics for the purpose, until this goes to the Supreme Court, which I wouldn't be surprised if it does. I mean, if Hobby Lobby can take something as simple as contraception to the Supreme Court and win right now. Yes, I'm digressing, but these things are related. The fact is, we've got free speech, but as long as free speech is what corporations have, it's for sale. I'd just like to keep what remnants of it we have, and the current agreement, which we all didn't get to vote on, that people are being asked to sign, is just one more insult, and I'm sorry.
Will Burbank.
Thank you, Mike. I would like to build up of what Kathy was saying, but take it in a different direction. As probably everybody knows, there were several decisions this week, and the one I'd like to address is the case where called Harris v. Quinn, which had to do with the right of workers in home health care aides, basically, to essentially stop paying union dues. And it was based on a free speech argument. The news reporting has this as a very limited decision, and that it could have been a much more extreme assault on basic organizing rights for all public employees. But I found it just very disturbing, and I'm very concerned about where it seems to be leading us. And part of that is informed by something else that happened, something that happened last week. I lost a very dear friend, a woman that probably some of you, many of you know. Her name is Sylvia Wall. She's 90 years old, and she was one of our most consistent and avid observers or viewers. She sat at home and watched our televised meetings, and then the next day, half the time, I could be guaranteed to get a call commenting on something that happened or asking for clarification. She was, to the end, civically involved, mentally just very, very deeply interested. You may not know, she had formerly worked at Cornell. She was a senior research extension associate. She had done very early work related to helping people age in place. She was instrumental in coming up with things such as our local food net program. I've been told by Beverly Livesey that she helped create her own COFA office. And just on a... she also wanted to stay in her own house and put together a network of friends and associates and employees that allowed her to do that literally up to the last week of her life. She got FoodNet delivered meals and never failed to talk about the wonderful quality and how much deeply she appreciated that. She also had a home health aide and a nurse. And I know that if she were alive still, she would be deeply disturbed about the Supreme Court decision, because these were not unimportant employees to her. They were critical to her continued ability to live in the way she chose. And I hope that at some point our society will see the wisdom of treating all workers decently. Thank you.
Anyone else? Carol Chalk.
Yeah, thank you for the moment of silence for Stu. I heard today that there'll be a they're looking to have a some kind of remembrance of Stu in the fall that would be a town gown remembrance, which is so fitting. Until the week that he died, Stu continued to bring people from campus down to be involved in the community and continued to be a teacher and a mentor to so many of us from the community who were involved, not only his former students, but anybody. A shout-out to Stu, wherever you are. I always thought that we'd get to say goodbye. And so it's very sad that we didn't. And another shout-out to the town of Dryden. Mm-hmm. I mean, how about that town of Dryden to have hung in there, to have achieved the decision that they did with help, but with real perseverance hanging in there. And I was looking for it. I think I have it open on my other computer. I read the Court of Appeals decision, and it was 5-2. And not only did they really clearly affirm the right of towns to determine their own zoning and the fact that that zoning law, which is rooted in the police power, for those of us planning students who studied with Stu, among others, to reaffirm that power supersedes the state oil and gas law. And not only did they do that, but they made this decision awarding costs. So it's really quite a resounding victory. So congratulations to Dryden and Middlefield.
Dan Klein.
Yeah, thank you. I wanted to mention that the annual Danby Fun Day celebration will be happening Saturday, July 12th, 10-4, at the Firehouse on 96B in Danby. There's a parade that starts at 10:30, and then there's the regular other things you might imagine, like chicken barbecue, games, music, and Danby fun.
Anyone else? Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Michael. Thinking back about Stuart Stein, in 1974, I came on the Common Council of the City of Ithaca, and I replaced Stuart, and there are those who said that was really not a good switch. But through the years, I've known Stuart. I lived in the Third Ward for many, many years and sought counsel from him. He was an interesting character to me. He and Ed Conley were good friends. A woman named Jean Angel, who was the county Democratic chair, also. And Stuart Stein had a huge amount of to do with what the Ithaca Commons looks like, what all of downtown Ithaca looks like. And he came off the hill with intelligence and piles, bags full of common sense. And he was able to take his vision, give it to local elected officials, and it turned into something. There were many, many people involved in it. Tate Van Court was a city planning director at the time, hired freshly out of New York City, very young, came here, and all through the 70s, there were people who worked with Stuart. The community is blessed to have him for all the time they had him. And one of the first days we were here in this room, he sat here, and there was another gentleman from the Mega organization, and I was sitting over here taking pictures of him. So I have that picture on my phone that I'm not supposed to be using. But at any rate, I just wanted to say something about him. He was huge in my life as a local elected official. and huge in the whole community for many, many years.
Jim, I certainly think we all join those comments you just made.
Yes, indeed.
And Carol. On a lighter note, I'd like to say I had fun Saturday. Came down to the Juneteenth celebration, and we had a nice turnout of county representation there. Our county administrator was there, our public information officer, and a number of people from various departments. It was fun. I especially liked watching the news arrive on horseback and had the union officer read the proclamation, the general order that announced to originally in Texas to the people down there the Emancipation Proclamation, frankly, and how it would operate under the martial law at that time. So thanks to all those folks that did the work to put together that community celebration. We have so many wonderful ones in Tompkins County, and they're fun. I wish I could go to every one of them, and probably the rest of us do too. Unfortunately, they're sometimes scheduled all at the same time with one another, but we'll do our best to help people celebrate and remember how good Tompkins County can be. Anyone else? I have one appointment. Thanks to Kathy, she's reminded me. I'd like to appoint to the Workforce Investment Board Amy Hendricks as an at-large representative. Term expires 6/30/2017. And to the Water Resources Council, James Belazic, an at-large representative. Term expires 12/31/17. On the chair's report, I would simply mention that I did go down to the Regional Economic Development Council meeting last week that was held in Owego, and it was interesting. We're getting ready at the council to begin the review of the applications. We have about 180 applications for funding in the CFA process in the Southern Tier region. And the ranking of those will begin the scoring at our August meeting. In the meanwhile, of course, staff will be reviewing them, and the Albany area will be reviewing them. A new wrinkle here will be that if there are a number in each county that get the perfect score of 20, they will then ask the counties to prioritize them for funding, and they will be calling, I was told, the chief elected official. I don't tend to prioritize them by myself. I will be consulting with TCAD and our planners and other people regarding that. Report by the county administrator, Joseph Mariana. Joe Mariana.
Joe.
You have to remember, it's not Joseph. Right?
That's right. Talk to my parents about that. I've never understood that myself either.
I do name changes at my practice if you need it.
I think Harry S. Truman was president when I was born, and I think his name was Harry, so I think my parents were inspired by that, but that's a story for another day. I've just got a couple of items on my list tonight, one of which will take a couple of minutes to get through. But I did want to let the legislature know that we are going to be bringing three bond resolutions to the Budget Committee in mid-July at its meeting. So as a part of the 2014 budget, you've approved a capital program with a lot of projects. It's now time to go into the debt markets and borrow the money to pay for those projects. So we are going to be bringing about $8.9 million worth of bond resolutions to the committee in mid-July. That will come to the full legislature, I think, at your first meeting in August. We may add another one to it. Mike asked Carl to talk about the TC3 master plan. So we may add that and have a fourth resolution for you by that time. So get that on your radar and expect that to occur. that was really the only kind of ongoing point I wanted to make. As a part of my report tonight, I also wanted to ask for the legislature's confirmation of an appointment to an interim department head position. And as we do that, I want to ask the legislature if anyone would like to adjourn to executive session to talk about the personnel matter. And if not, I can give a description of what I'm proposing, and at the end we'll seek a motion from you to confirm an appointment.
Joe, why don't you give a little background, and then let's put that question to the group as to whether they want to go into executive session about that.
Very good. The position that we're talking about is airport manager. Everyone knows or should know that Bob Nicholas will be retiring at the end of July after 25 years of very distinguished service at the airport. Knowing that this was coming, the county has been engaged in a nationwide search process over the past several months. We put together a 10-person search committee that included Leslin and Dan, several others on that search committee. We conducted two rounds of interviews, the first for a preliminary group and then for finalists. And at the end of that long and very thorough, I think, appropriate process, the search committee concluded the process without reaching a consensus on a finalist for that position, on someone who could step into Bob's shoes. And they decided to commence a new search. Fairly disappointing result, but I think an appropriate decision by the search committee. However, we are in a very fortunate situation in this community in having a local individual who is uniquely equipped to step into the management of the airport while we regroup and get underway and complete a new search. So tonight, I'll be asking you to confirm the appointment of Michael Hall to serve as the interim manager of the airport. I think many of you know Mike. He's an Ithaca native. He's a Cornell grad. He is a former fighter pilot in the Air Force who, over the course of a 27-year career, rose to the rank of general in the Air Force. In the Air Force, he had a variety of responsible positions, including the command of the 174th Fighter Wing in Syracuse. In that job, he was really responsible for managing Hancock Air Base, which is the military equivalent of an airport, and did that quite well. Through that experience and others that he had prior to that, he's very familiar with airport operations, with FAA requirements, with safety regulations, and especially in knowing how to manage and lead staff. After that service, he didn't stop. Mike was the commissioner of the New York State Division of Military and Naval Affairs, which is the agency that is in charge of the Air Force and Army National Guard in New York State. He also served as the chair of the New York State Disaster Preparedness Commission under the first Governor Cuomo, or as I like to refer to him, the good Governor Cuomo. More recently, Mike has been involved with what had been a moribund National Warplane Museum in Elmira. That has been transformed into the Wings of Eagles Discovery Center. That's a regional science academy for youth. Mike is also a longstanding member of our Air Services Board and one that is very dedicated to the mission of that board. At this important point in the life of the airport, and I think we all realize that we're at a fairly critical crossroads, the search committee saw in Mike someone who would not only serve as a caretaker of the airport, but as one who will bring insights, energy, and tremendous organizational skills and leadership skills the job as we try to optimize the performance of the airport and as we undertake a search for the new manager. Mike did meet with the search committee last week, so this was not a decision by fiat. He met with the search committee last week to discuss these credentials, his interest in the job, and his approach to the position. Not all members were present, most were, but we did telephone polling and reached out to the members who weren't there, and I believe I'm accurate in saying that this appointment is the unanimous has the unanimous consensus of the search committee that we pulled together. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would either ask for adjournment to an executive session, or if that's not needed, then for a motion to confirm Michael Hall as the interim manager of the airport.
Well, What's the pleasure of the group? Martha?
I have a couple of comments, but I think I'm happy to do this in session.
Does anyone like to have an executive session? Dooley Kiefer?
Well, I'm not sure. Are questions about salary for executive session?
I think they could be asked in open session. Peter?
I myself would prefer executive session. I have some questions that I will not ask in open question.
Okay. All right. We have one person who's asked for an executive session, so I think that, in fairness, we need to do that. I really think, rather than to do it at this point in the meeting, can we wait till the end? We'll add that to our executive session on labor negotiations.
Certainly.
And also, I didn't mention, we also have to talk about potential land sale tonight, too. Will Burbank.
Relative to that, Mike, I know that presumably we'd want to come back and have a formal vote after that.
Yes, we
could
would.
Could we actually have two executive sessions and have one and then a public session and then go do the other matters after that?
Well, we could if we really want to do it. Let's wait and see whether we need to do
I'm
it.
Just thinking to the cameras and whatever. So.
Yeah, well, we may come back into session afterwards. Yeah. All right. Anyone else want to talk before we go into executive session later? All right. Go ahead, Joe.
That concludes my report.
We'll go to the county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
Thanks. I did want to have a brief executive session on litigation at the time we're doing the other executive sessions. Also wanted to say just a few words about Stu. As you all know, Stu was a great leader of this board. But when he left, I think in 1990, he left to be executive director of Mega. When Mega started, it had two companies and two municipalities, and Stu wanted to expand it so that more municipalities could participate in the cost savings. Now Mega has close to 300 municipalities and school districts, mostly not solely because of Stu, but largely because of Stu. He served as executive director, I think, until 2006, and until this, until his death, he served as chairman of our special projects division. And one thing, when Stu left to work at Mega, he took me with him, so I've been I still work here. I've been counsel to Mega for, since Mega's beginning. So I've had the opportunity to work with Stu now for over 20 years. And he was just a true mentor. I mean, he would set out to do things, and he always seemed to accomplish them. And he was so direct and to the point, and yet managed to always be a gentleman. And, I'll really miss him. I worked with him for over 20 years, and met with him frequently up until now. So, be sorry not to have Stu.
Thank you, John. Rick Snyder is our Director of Finance.
I have a brief report tonight on just two issues. I'd like to give you the May sales tax report, which I've laid a copy in front of you. And I also like to make some comments on the most recent county auction. First, the May 2014 sales tax report. The sales tax distributions for May in the county were up 3.06%. Compared to last year, that can be found in the midsection of the spreadsheet on the third column that says percent change. If you're looking at the year-to-date information for the county, you move over to the far right columns. The year-to-date tax distributions for the county's portion total $12,617,887 compared to $12,367,376 in 2013, and this represents an increase of 2.03%. According to the sales tax distribution summary, we should be at 41.7% of our budget. We are currently at 38.5% of our budget. Are there any questions about the sales tax for me? Okay, on the auction. On the auction report, we had a packed room on June 23rd for the countywide auction at which 15 foreclosed properties were sold. It is a little bit too early right now to give our final figures for the auction because we net the proceeds out and we haven't received all the payments in from the folks who bought the properties, and we also need to do the deeds and put them into the hands of the new property owners. But it appears that at the figures that we have now recorded, that the net proceeds for the county after all expenses have been paid will clear around $150,000. This does not include any proceeds from the sale of three City of Ithaca foreclosures, which were included in the auction. Are there any questions on that? If not, that concludes my report.
Thank you, Rick. A short report on that auction doesn't really give justice to all the work that went into the tax collection up to that point. And it's a really remarkable effort. We appreciate it.
Mike?
Yes.
Thanks. I guess I have a question about the sales tax summary. So if we should be at 41% of budget and we're around 38%, when you say should be, is that if you allocate each month's a portion by divide by 12, the year's total by 12?
That's just the quick and dirty way of dividing it by 12 and taking it times 5. It's 5/12 of the year. If we look at it with a more systematic approach, looking at what our proceeds would normally be tracked over a 10-year period, it would track very close to what we normally would be at or should be at for this period of time, because there are lighter months in the beginning of the year followed by the heaviest months for the year, which are November and December. So we were in this exact same position last year at around this time, because it's about when I came on board here, and we had the same kind of falling behind of where we thought we should be at budget, but it was more than made up by the end of the fiscal year.
Okay. All right. That helps a lot. Thanks.
Okay. We're ready to move on. Let's go to the consent agenda. We have resolutions out of the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution A, which is ID 4903, Award of Bid, Hydraulic Truck Scale, Solid Waste Division. Resolution B.
Off.
We'll take Resolution B off. Let's go to Resolution C, ID 4901, Award of Bid, Used Window Face Turner, Solid Waste Division. Windrow Face Turner, Solid Waste Division. Out of the Government Operations Committee, Resolution D, ID 4914, authorizing a public hearing on Local Law Number D of 2014, repeal of Local Law Number 1 of 2012, opt-out of Section 487 of the New York State Real Property Tax Law. So that one's going to get pulled. Resolution E, appointment of Election Commissioner for 2015 through 2016, that's ID 4891. Resolution F, ID 4930, authorization to execute quitclaim deeds, sale of foreclosure properties at the public auction. Then out of the Public Safety Committee, we have Resolution G, ID 4909, acceptance of grant and budget adjustments. Sheriff's?
I want to pull the one that's about the license plate readers. Is that G or H?
That is.
There are two of them.
Both. I'm not sure.
Oh.
Which one, Brian?
Okay.
Both.
It's both of them. Okay.
Both?
Sorry.
Okay. You want G off?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. Resolution H, ID 4808, budget adjustment, Sheriff's Department, pending committee action.
Yeah. So if that's, if they're, yes, that one too.
All right. Take off G and H. Resolution I, ID 4906, budget adjustments 2014 through 2016, assigned council program. And then out of the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution J, that's 4912, authorization to apply for New York State assistance payments for farmland protection implementation project funding to hold a conservation easement on Glenwood Farms in the town of Ulysses. Resolution K, ID 4911, authorization to apply for New York State assistance payments for farmland protection implementation project funding to hold a conservation easement on Budzurik Farms in the town of Newfield. With those removals, can I get a motion on the balance of the consent agenda? Kathy Luz Herrera, seconded by Kiefer. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That's unanimous.
Mike, could we take Resolution B early so that the staff can leave?
Resolution B? We sure can. That's out of Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Can we move it?
Sure.
Kathy? Kathy Luz Herrera, Chair.
Thank you. I'd like to move Resolution B, Award of Bid, Truss and Fabric Building, Solid Waste Division, and I so move.
Second.
Seconded by Jim Dennis. Discussion, Dooley?
I ask that it be pulled because it's lacking what I think is a nice additional bit of information from Barbara Ekstrom. There was only one bid for this portable building. It was estimated that it would cost us $70,000, but it only cost $56,212. So I would like to add in line 10, with a bid of $56,212, parenthesis, lower than the estimate of $70,000, end parenthesis.
Is that friendly?
It's a motion.
Yes, it's friendly.
Yeah.
Friendly to the freckender? Friendly to the seconder?
And that too.
Okay. Anything else? Ready to vote on that one? All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Excuse me, Michael. I have a picture of that wonderful $56,000 building if you'd like to see it. So I'll just kind of slide it around the room.
Can I get one for, like, much smaller?
Shall we just go down the list? Jim Dennis, Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee.
Thank you. The major item we had already was passed on the TC3 budget. In your red folders, there is a calendar of September and October, and the expanded budget committee calendar is being presented to you this evening. We would like you to take a look at it and think about it and let us know what you think about it. And let me just say I'm not going to change any of the meetings. So you can certainly try.
We can think about it, huh?
We can think about it and let you know.
This whole thing has been thought about in terms of when other committee meetings meet, and we tried to put together almost all the mistakes that we might have made. And if we have made one, we will look at it, but we think it will work. And on July 8th, I believe at 5:30 in this room, there is a meeting of the Budget Committee to interview a few people who have expressed interest to be TC3 board members. There is the one vacancy, and we received a dozen or so applications, and three people we chose to interview. A couple of other people we know very well, and we did not want to interview them, and they will certainly be in the running for the selection the committee might make.
Questions for Jim?
I don't have anything.
Martha?
I see that the NYSAC meeting is on Monday the 22nd, and we have an expanded budget committee meeting scheduled. I know Joe doesn't ever go to NYSAC in the fall, but I don't know if that's a problem for anybody else. I wouldn't be planning to, but...
I think this has intervened as long as I've been here. The presentations and NYSAC. I will say this to you, that there are 14 of us, and I certainly don't expect all 14 people to be here at every expanded budget committee meeting. If Joe happens to be away on that night, then someone else will come in Joe's place, and we would try to do that. If everyone goes, then clearly we can't have the meeting. But, you know, you do your best. Each of you has to make a choice about these meetings, and I frankly don't expect everyone to show up all the time. I hope that I'm able to be here or the vice chair to start the meeting, but, you know, clearly we recognize when that won't.
Kathy.
In the spirit of open discussion, I'd just like to ask if there would be any interest of knowing, for example, if there might be only 2 or 5 or 10 legislators there. Number of legislators?
The number of people that hold the meeting is 1, I believe. Isn't that right, Kathy?
For the presentations, yes.
Yeah, for the presentation. Voting meetings, obviously we need a quorum to vote on something and hope that it would get moved into the budget.
So my follow-up is, for the voting meetings, will you entertain suggestions from people as to whether or not the meeting should be held in case people can't attend? I heard you really strongly saying you don't want to hear what we have to say about whether or not we can attend
meetings,
other meetings.
Kathy, please remember the voting meetings. We have been very flexible about the voting meeting.
I'm glad to hear you say that.
I don't want to have a voting meeting and not have people here. I mean, because we invite the department heads who have to show up here, and of course I would be flexible about that. The expanded budget committee presentations consist of a lot of moving parts, and we hope that we can get as many people as we can get. But you know, I have learned something here, and I'm not going to hold a voting meeting if I don't have people here.
Thank you.
Martha?
Jim, maybe I'm missing it, but we usually have a public forum and a public... Oh, I see. The forum is October 8th, right?
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Can we move on?
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Public Safety Committee, Brian Robinson, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Public Safety Committee did meet today at 5 o'clock to get through the 3 resolutions on the consent agenda. However, 2 of them have been pulled, so that batting average will get you in the Hall of Fame, but it didn't do much good here. But at any rate, let me point out, if you haven't already seen, that there were suggested changes to the 2 resolutions that were pulled that are in your packet, and they were considered friendly at the time of the meeting. I will move the first one, knowing that the 2 are obviously related and that any discussion would probably relate. Hang on a second.
My questions are really on the second one, though.
Well, they're both off.
They were both pulled.
You pulled them both. But as I was just saying, they are so related that I would hope that we could have the discussion of both items at the same time, even though we're only... you can't open them both up at the same time.
No, we have to 1 at a time. Could you move Resolution G, please?
Yep. I'll move Resolution G, Acceptance of Grant and Budget Adjustment, Sheriff's Department, ID 4909.
Seconded by Jim Dennis. Brian? Or Carol, do you want to speak to this one yet?
No, go ahead. I guess the only thing I'll say is obviously we don't have anyone from the Sheriff's Department staff here. My guess is because they were on consent, but I will be glad to try to answer any questions that come up regarding this.
Yeah, thank you. I did call Ken earlier today, but I guess he didn't have a chance to get back, or maybe even hear the message. And I called you and spoke to you, Brian. The question that I have, I noticed it more in the second one. You know, the first one, we're accepting a new grant. The second one, what it seems to me we're doing is that we had received funds to help us develop some policy for some other equipment, and instead of doing that, we are going to use it plus this new money in this first resolution to buy license plate readers. So the questions that I have include, actually I have two main questions. One is, did we ever formulate the policy that we got the money for on the second one, which was a policy and information sharing protocol for mobile connectivity for our patrol vehicles. So I want to make sure that that's in place. And then, as I always do with these equipment grants for equipment that for which I'm not aware of whether the county has a policy as to when we'll use, particularly surveillance equipment, which this is. My knowledge of license plate readers is in places where they have toll booths, and they use those license plate readers to, to make sure if people go through without paying the toll. So I'm just not understanding exactly what we need 8 license plate readers for, and if there's policy to about when we use it or not.
Brian, you want to respond?
Yeah, I'll give it a shot. First off, let me say that this is not the use of this type of equipment or this specific equipment is not a new thing. It's been in use for a while here. These are additional items. The grant became available, and they applied for them and got them. Some of them are going to be used on our vehicles from the Sheriff's Department. Others were going to the city. I believe each of the village departments each got one under this grant. And so it's not a new thing. I guess I'm forgetting part B or C to your question. What was it? Policy?
Did we figure out a policy? What the money was meant to do to begin with was determine a policy on some other equipment that we got. So I just want to know if we managed to achieve that by some other means.
Yeah, the policy would be – that's not something we would be involved in. That's the department sets policy for everything. I'm not well versed in this specific policy, or even if there is one. Like I said, it's already been in use. I just couldn't tell you policy. Maybe if you ask a more specific question, if you have one, I might be able to answer that. In regards to any specific concerns that you might have.
Okay. The second resolution says that in 2011 we were awarded $180,000 through the state homeland fiscal year 2011 state homeland security program, and the sheriff's office had targeted those funds to be used to conduct a countywide law enforcement information security risk assessment, leading to the development of policy and information sharing protocol, as well as the purchase of some equipment. I want to know if we ever developed it to the third whereas, whether we did that, accomplished that by some other means before we agreed to spend the money on something else.
I couldn't tell you that. I don't know.
Okay. Peter Stein.
Well, I have a similar question, but I'll be more direct about it. The only two functions I know of license plate readers are one for parking enforcement, which I know the city intends to do, and the other is for giving tickets when people have gone through red lights and things like that. And it was my understanding that several states do that. It's my understanding that you can't do that in New York. So I'm wondering what we bought them for, exactly what is their function.
First off, these are mobile readers, and maybe you've seen them. They're actually mounted to patrol vehicles presently, and they read license plates as you drive by. The other functions, you can have those that actually do physically take a picture and basically mail you a ticket. You know, the semantics of that, you know, I'm not familiar with the details. These particular...
I am, unfortunately, in the state of Maryland, but go ahead.
My kids are, too, in other states, but I'm not here. But at any rate, these are readers. They're receivers of information from Department of Criminal Justice Services, which is also part of DMV. They're a storing of DMV records. Where they are advantageous is everyone owns a car. If they own a car, they have to register it. It has to be within the repository of data for New York State. If in, you know, and you have to register it every 2 years, let's say you forget to register your car. That information is stored, and as you drive by, it will read that information from Albany saying that car is no longer registered, or that car, the insurance has lapsed because someone somewhere entered that information into Albany saying there's a problem with it. Where it's really good is, and I brought up this example earlier. Are you familiar with Amber Alerts, where children are abducted and so on and so forth, and there's a license plate associated with a suspect with that? If you drive by that, and you wouldn't even know it, it's somewhere way far away in New York State, and that person, that vehicle, happens to be driving through Ithaca, you will get that alert right then.
Okay, thank you. That's
if you're a homicide suspect, you know, you will get that alert.
Perhaps you would not use the second. I'm not a homicide.
No.
Never mind.
I'm not saying you.
Can we proceed to a vote on this one?
Well, if there's any other questions.
Dan Klein.
I just had a question. Can you clarify what you're saying, that we already have these? And if that's the case, what is this grant? What's the difference in what we're getting? Or?
These are additional units.
Just more. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Ready to vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Can we take Resolution H?
Yes. Resolution H, ID 4908, Budget Adjustment at Sheriff's Department. And I would move that.
Is there a second? Peter Stein. Discussion? Who pulled that one? Oh, Carol, did you get your questions answered or not?
Yeah, I guess so. I voted for the first one, but this one, I actually didn't get the question answered, but I'm not sure that we can here, and I'm not going to ask to table it about whether we ever developed the other policy, but I'll leave it to Brian to maybe look into that, and if we didn't, to figure something out.
Sure.
Ready to vote? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? I think that's unanimous as well.
And that would conclude my report. The next regularly scheduled meeting is July 14th at 3:30, right here.
Mr. Let's go to Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. And that's Leslie McBean Claiborne, who is our chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. WDIC met last Wednesday right here in the chambers. We had a wonderful report from Jonathan and other members who not only participated, but were part of the committee developing the reading and discussion group. Let me preface this by saying I said this at our WDIC meeting. One of the things that WDIC has been trying to promote over the years is new, innovative, other ways of becoming educated and discussing and sharing information and experiences around issues of diversity and inclusion. And so the reading and discussion group is one of the things that sort of came out of thinking through this. As you may recall, we were fortunate to get a grant from the Community Foundation of Tompkins County for 2 years. It will be given us 2 years. This year was the first year to continue this program. Often when we ask people to attend a diversity training or, you know, multicultural training, whatever it is, you know, very often it's met with some pushback, sometimes some resistance, sometimes all that, and not again. We've gone to many of those. So we try to find different ways to allow people to sort of get the same information and experiences and to share with each other without it being cliche, we're going to a training. And this is one of those ways. So Jonathan and others with Paula's leadership came and presented to us the results and sort of just a snapshot of how the last round of the reading and discussion group went. And we're really pleased. One of the highlights is hearing from those who participated that they will 100% recommend and encourage others within the county to participate in other sessions. And so that was very encouraging. We also had an opportunity, one of the things we're suggesting to within our workforce is to consider another learning tool, which are the TEDx talks that are very popular these days. We had the opportunity to view one by Dr. Quinetta Robertson called The Science of Inclusion. I think it left everybody thinking. Folks were relatively quiet, but then I got lots of comments and conversation with others post-meeting. And we want to sort of, there are many of them out there and really want to try and encourage another way of learning. Most of them are 10, 15, 20 minutes long. They're not very long, but they give a wealth of information. So this was one, and Karen, I know, sent around the link. I don't know if it went to everyone, but she did send the link out for people to have an opportunity to take a look at it and perhaps engage in a staff development session around one of those talks. So that was exciting. We also heard from the county administrator. We had a chance to review perhaps the final draft of our diversity metrics sort of reporting system. There's still work to be done on our inclusion metrics, which is a little harder to do, so we can get a better view of what our county employment statistics look like. Really have really a better sense of what we're looking at. So that is in its final stages of being developed, and we're excited about that. We also talked a little bit just about how do we know how we're doing within our county relative to diversity and inclusion within each department, and perhaps looking at ways to invite, and this is, we're just talking about it, we haven't set anything in stone, to invite departments to share with each other, with us, you know, What are your goals for diversity and inclusion, and how are you working towards them? What efforts? How? Where do you need help? What's it looking like for you? So that we all are more in tune with that conversation, it becomes a natural part of how we do business. And, you know, we hear more about what's going on because there are wonderful things happening in the county, and many of us don't know. So it would be nice to know what people are doing and what innovative ideas they are using to create the kind of inclusive environment we want here in county government. So we had a very good meeting, lots of good discussion, interesting conversation around whether we should, whether there should be trainings and dialogues and workshops that are mandatory for people to attend. You know, given how stretched our workforce is, you know, that might be a difficult thing because people have to take off. And then when you come back, you know, the work that, you know, was only 3 hours long has now tripled in the amount of time you have to put in to accomplish it. So, you know, so there were questions around that, and we're just looking at it, and we're also going to be discussing in the future language within our request for proposals and even to the agencies who we fund around what are they doing in terms of diversity and inclusion. Not just saying that I have a statement, but what does that mean? How have you been implementing that statement? So we have a better picture of who we're doing business with as well, if we're serious about this. Those are all areas that we are considering. We continue to roll out to the county the diversity policy. I'm waiting for the next round of department heads to schedule time so that every department and every employee would have had an opportunity to not only review but to ask questions about the policy and its impact on them or not, or to share their opinion. So that is continuing. And that's my report. So we've been busy.
Sounds it. Questions for Leslin. Leslin, thank you for that report.
My pleasure.
Peter Stein chairs our Health and Human Services Committee.
Excuse me, can I do F&I when the time comes?
Did I skip it?
No. I just want to say it before we get to it. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's up next after
right.
Health and Human Services. Peter?
You ready for me?
Please.
I have nothing to say.
I don't
say.
Know if we're ever ready for you, Peter, but take a shot at it.
Well, I have nothing to say. We've had no meeting since we last reported, and we're having another meeting a week from today at the usual time.
Thank you. That was short and sweet. Now we go to facilities. Kathy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be sweet and short. We met on June 16th. We dealt with some of the resolutions that, all three of the resolutions that you got a chance to look at tonight. The award of bid on the Windrow, the used Windrow face turner. The first 10 times I read that, I thought it said window face turner. But Jim or somebody passed around a picture. I think it's on Leslin's desk right now. Oh. It's a really cool thing. It's for use in the food waste contract with Cayuga Compost. And what it does is turn the compost so that it turned the food waste so that it becomes compost sooner. It's used, and it helps utilize space because by using it, you can keep it in a tighter pattern. That was unanimous. We're so smart. And we also looked at the truss and fabric building. We entertained some questions about that. The solid waste division, I managed to get a deal with, see if I can find it, Cayuga Compost. They covered the cost of shipping and installation, and the county purchased the building. If the county decides to move the building in the future, it can easily be dismantled. It's a great thing to do to be able to store the compost, not exactly out of the weather, but where it won't get directly. It'll be dry, and it'll avoid airborne seeds and plant material, according to the resolution language that was presented with it. And another thing was the award of bid for the hydraulic truck scale. Now, those of us that like big machines, hydraulic truck scale is a very cool thing, and it's also going to be used in the transportation of the food waste and the scale because we've got to ensure an accurate weight. And, yes, Mr. Ellis will be calibrating the scale, and it will be part of his regular duties. These were passed unanimously, but we did have a great deal of discussion on certain aspects of these, which I went into detail about for you. What I won't go into detail about is the county administrator's report on the highway division projects, and in particular on the capital program information, because he did a really good summary last time. And the capital payment summary is one that was discussed at budget, I believe, and I think at our larger budget meetings, the expanded budget committee, or at the voting meetings at some point, we'll have a chance to refer back to it. But these were important. That's it for now, except to say that we're going to meet again on July 21st. We will be meeting at 10:30, and I believe we'll be probably considering some additional resolutions related to facilities and infrastructure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kathy. Jim Dennis has a question.
Not a question, a comment. The food waste program, the Village of Trumansburg is involved in this program after the town of Ithaca started it, and not the whole village, but everyone got all their gear. And it seems like to me that if I've adapted to it as quickly as I have, people who are really serious about it are probably doing a really fine job. It seems to be working quite well. And interestingly enough, the people who pick it up every Wednesday, if you put, and they incredibly check it out, right? They look in the plastic thing, and if you put the wrong thing in, they'll write you a little note, and they'll take your stuff, but they will write you a little note and say, you know, this is not something that's supposed to be in there. Please don't do it. And it's so kind and cool and informative that I think the program is going to be a huge success as it moves forward. And because we have the Windrow Turner and this building out in Trumansburg, it should go along very well. And I would hope that everyone in the county gets involved in it. And I think it will be a really neat program for us to do, and I fully support it.
Thanks, Jim.
Kathy, I was today driving out on Hanshaw Road and noticed all the construction, and that project seems to be moving along really, really well. Looks like they've been doing excavations for the drainage and other things on the road, and I'm sure if the folks up there can bear with us a little longer, they'll end up with a very nice project when we get down up there.
Well, also, the weather cooperates.
Also, I'm very happy. I also drove Route 13, as I do frequently, and thank you to New York State. They have planed the section of Route 13 from the Village of Dryden Line south to the Route 366 overlap, and we'll be repaving that. If anybody's driven that in the last 2 years, you know how bad that pavement has been out there. So I'll just mention that to you.
Cool.
Can we move on to the Economic Development Committee? Will Burbank.
Thank you, Mike.
Well,
this, too, will be short because we have not met since we've not had a meeting since a while. But we are having our next meeting on the 7th of July. We will be in the Scott Heyman room. If you come, you'll hear a presentation on the proposals for the Wharton Studio Museum, which some folks are trying to get together for Stewart Park. We'll be talking about our priority trail strategy and the 2014 tourism budget that has been proposed by STPB. And we're going to hear about an overview of some new companies, try to get a better understanding why companies come here, why they stay here. And finally, I did want to share with you something, sort of a memo that we got from Martha Armstrong from TCAD. You may have noticed an article in the paper several weeks ago talking about a significant decrease in jobs locally. The Ithaca Journal reported that According to state figures, we had had a decline of 1,200 jobs from May of 2013 to May of this year. And this caused a great deal of puzzlement because we have not seen a huge rise in numbers of folks going to the one-stop center. We have not seen, we talked with folks at Cornell. They have not had significant layoffs. Actually, from the best we can calculate locally, we actually grew jobs by about 300. So once again, the local reality, the local numbers do not seem to be in sync with what we're getting from the state. And we're still trying to figure out why that might be. But I don't know if anybody else has anything to add to that. But
did you happen to track down the source of that study?
The start was in the State Department of Labor. The accuracy is being called to question. You think that if that were actually happening, we would know at the ground level. So that is my report. Let's see if anybody has any questions. Martha.
Do you know if Martha Armstrong sent anything to the paper or is going to follow up? Or is she waiting to figure out more of what the...
Joe, do you know if she did anything on that?
Yeah, I think we've reached out to the paper to talk with them, and I'm going to look backward to see if Marcia would agree.
Have we connected with the press on that? The Voice, the Ithaca Voice, which is where the... Right.
Okay.
Their story was what, correcting it?
If anything, amplifying it. So there was an article in that online publication yesterday or today that gave rise to this current wave of review of those numbers. So I know we've responded. I believe we responded to that one, but not to the Ithaca Tribune.
What is the Ithaca Voice?
It's a new online newspaper.
Who does it?
There's a fellow. Yeah, his name is Jeff Stein.
But perhaps, Marcia, we can reach out to the journal again and see if we can get them to pick it up. Okay. So I will share that memo with you all. And I see a reporter from the Ithaca Times over there. Maybe we can get some coverage there as well.
Well, I heard recently at a Dryden Town board meeting, which I think is good economic development news, and that is we have the first potential startup New York project in the old Wernick facility in Freeville, where in Kodama, which is a pretty impressive manufacturer in our area, small manufacturer, is going to be buying that facility. And Cornell University is working to amend its Startup New York plan to be able to add, I think, a third of that building, perhaps, to that. In Kodama, makes parts for various machines and things through huge 3D printers, and they're quite an impressive thing that they can do with that, make parts that can't be made with molds very easily, for example. And those of us in Dryden who were very sad that the family business, Wernick's, closed down after many, many years, are excited to think that that facility may again come to life. Carol.
Do you know if, are they moving out of their facility on Cliff Street to do this, or is that supposed to be an additional?
I don't think so. Facility. Jim, do you know?
I do know. No, they are not moving out of their facility on Cliff Street. They have been very crowded, and this is a new arm of the company. And they gave detailed explanation of what they were going to do at the last IDA meeting or maybe two IDA meetings ago. That very question was asked, and they just need to get out because they need more space than they have on Cliff Street. And they're very pleased to go out there, and they have some really innovative, incredible things they're going to be doing. So.
Anything else, Will?
No, thank you.
All right, thanks. Oh, Peter?
I thought that Startup New York required new companies, not just an expansion of old existing companies. Am I wrong?
I think a new expansion can be qualified.
Expansion is, okay.
I believe it had to be a significant expansion, which is, this is.
Okay, let's move on to Government Operations Committee, and Dooley Kiefer is the vice chair.
I didn't know Nate wasn't going to be here. I
you didn't know until the last minute.
I have no idea what he would have said. So
does any other member of the committee want to chime in? All right.
Then Mike, would this be the time Martha brought it up earlier? I mean, what came out of GO was the privilege of the floor documents. Is that where it came out of?
Yes.
And I'm just wondering what's the... Is this a done deal, or is it seamless? Martha was asking, or is this another process?
We can keep talking about it. I think from Nate's perspective, we were finished talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Carol Chalk.
We will talk about it some more.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't even raise my hand.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were done, Leslie. Do you want to continue?
No, yeah, I was trying to hear what Dooley was saying. So Nate thinks it's a done deal. Is what you're saying?
I think Nate thought we had beaten it to death, probably, but I think it's reasonable to take this additional feedback to the committee, so I will do that.
Thank you, because I ditto what Martha said as well.
Carol Chalk?
Yeah, I was dismayed to see, and maybe we could add this, if the committee would take it under advisement, that I agree with the concerns about having it there. But at least if we are going to have it there, to right there be letting people know if this isn't an appropriate venue to bring up a particular concern, to right there know where is the appropriate place to bring it. So if you have that type of comment, here's where you submit it. At the very least, we should have.
Brian?
I'll pass. I was just going to say that it should go back to committee. It was supposed to be a kind of a working document anyway. And okay. I was just afraid we were going to get into a long conversation about it here. But if it's going back to committee, that's where it should go, I would think.
Well, Dooley's saying she's going to take these comments back. Jim?
Dooley, as vice chair and a member of the committee, do you believe it's the committee's goal to put this out to have the rest of us vote on?
It was our understanding from the legislative chair that it's his decision what this document looks like, and it was just to be discussed at our committee and suggestions made to the chair with no expectation that the legislature as a whole would vote on it. But if the whole legislature wants to get that's a
please
question.
Please don't take that from my question.
Okay. I was not at that meeting, and I took what was given to us, and Kathy Covert has put that in on the blue cards, and that's what I read tonight. Kathy Luz Herrera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just took the liberty of looking at the Tompkins County meeting portal where there's some notes. That's actually how I did my chair's report, although it's really small. But anyway, in it, when it's talking about discussion items under the rules of the legislature, it says something that I find interesting, and I'd like to ask Jonathan about it. It reports that the committee reviewed the revised privilege of the floor form, followed with an explanation from Mr. Wood that it is not appropriate to state that there cannot be a negative statement without also stating there cannot be a positive statement. And I think this is part of where the concern is from a few of us. And I just wondered if you could state it for me in a way that I can apply it.
Sure. The committee was concerned about what would be legally or constitutionally permissible to do and say. So I kind of outlined that. And, you know, constitutionally, this legislature or other legislatures, they don't have to require, they don't have to let people speak. And they could limit what people speak on by subject. For example, we'll take comments about the landfill or take comments related to our agenda. What they can't do is regulate comments based on the content. For example, they can't say, we'll take comments on the landfill, but only those for the landfill or only those against the landfill. And what had been happening previously is the chair and others had said, well, we don't want negative comments about employees. So we'd have this situation where we had a few occasions where somebody would come and make a positive comment about the employee, and then you say, well, you can't have a rule where people could say positive things about the employee but restrict people from saying negative things. And I thought the whole concept was sort of like, it wasn't that you weren't supposed to say negative things about employees, but you could say positive. It was the basic notion that personnel matters were not appropriate, whether positive or negative, that personnel matters should be directed elsewhere, and that by saying, well, you can't say negative things about an employee, it was suggesting that we were taking a side, and we actually had situations where people were saying positive and you said couldn't say negative. I thought that was never really the idea. The idea was that you shouldn't have personnel matters, if that was the will of the legislature, but it was not that you can say positive things but not negative things. So it was an attempt to clarify that.
It's really helpful. Thank you.
I should say the next meeting is July 22nd at 5:30.
Thank you, Dooley. The old library committee has had two meetings in which we have had presentations from the responders to the RFEI, the request for expressions of interest, which we put out, and we listened to them, we asked questions, it was done in an executive session, and we really have not completed our review of that, and we will be meeting again on the 9th of July to continue our discussion now that we've had the interviews with those groups. Any questions I can answer on that? Planning and Energy and Environmental Quality Committee, Carol Chalk, Chair.
Thank you, Mike. I just want to give a thank you to our staff, Ed, Jay, Jonathan, and Joe, all spent time that I don't think that they had budgeted responding to the folks who wanted us to see about opting back in. You saw that we're going to go to hearing. But thank you, because that wasn't on your schedule, and you all came. We will meet again July 16th at 12:30.
Thank you. Questions for Carol? Back to me for Charter Review Committee, and all I can tell you is we're going to meet tomorrow at 2:30. And we'll continue a discussion about the charter, in particular what we've heard about previously in the public works section. Minutes of the previous meeting, June 17th. Brian? Seconded by Martha. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Any unfinished business? Now, we have four topics to go into executive session about, and those are labor negotiations, litigation, sale of real property, and what's the fourth one?
Airport manager.
The possible appointment of a particular person. And Willis wondered if we could actually split that up. Do you really think that's necessary, Will?
Well, only because we needed to have a formal public action after the first.
We would need to do that. How does that work? Maybe we should. How do people feel about doing it that way? We could then we could let the staff go home for the balance of the executive session if we did as Will suggests. Martha?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
Okay. Then let's have a motion to go into executive session to discuss a particular person, an employee.
So moved.
Potential employee. Then moved by Dave. Is there a second? Seconded by Carol. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
That's unanimous. And we will be going to talk about this topic, and we will come back and we potentially will take action. All right, we're back in regular session, and I think the order of business next is to accept a motion to ratify the proposed appointment of Michael Hall as the interim airport director. Martha Robertson, seconded by Leslin McBean Claiborne. Discussion. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Oh, I'm sorry. Martha has a question.
You asked for discussion.
All right, go ahead.
I just thought that.
Thought you were voting early.
You know what? I mean, we're back in public session. Maybe Joe should describe what we're voting on and what the arrangement will be. And I want to say that I think Mike Hall is an outstanding person to take this position as an interim basis. And we deeply appreciate Bob's time with us, and this will make a great transition.
This is, in fact, an interim appointment. It will allow us to undertake a second search for a permanent airport manager, and in the meantime, be able to look at the organization and see whether there are any tweaks that we want to do before we go out and market the position again. With respect to compensation, the compensation will be comparable to what we're paying the airport manager right now, but we will not have to make fringe benefit payments on this appointment, which then allows us to use that money to maintain consulting services for an airline relations person that we've retained and is doing a great job right now.
Are we okay?
Yeah.
We're getting better.
I think we're accident prone tonight, aren't we?
I was making mischief over here.
We should put this place on the market.
All right. Thank you, Joe, for that. We have a motion to approve. Are ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? I believe that's unanimous. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Now we will. I will ask for a motion to go into executive session to discuss labor negotiations, litigation, and the proposed property sale. And we will have an executive session. We will come out of that, but we don't expect to take any other business or any other action after the end of that business. So it's been moved by Brian. Is there a second? Seconded by Martha. All in favor of the executive session, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? And we'll go out while the cameras are shut down again.